You are listening to Buck News Podcast 276. You lucky fellow, you lucky gal, you lucky someone else on the gender spectrum.
That was a weird intro.
Welcome back to the Puck News Podcast. We're feeling loose. We're feeling free. Probably going to be a little bit of a shorter episode tonight. Maybe, maybe not. This is Features Editor John Gentile. We got a cracking episode. We got a lot of interesting stuff to talk about. We might be long. We might be short. Who knows? Adam White, since we're being weird, and we're here with the main man, the champion. Everybody loves him. Even his children like him. He just hosted a three-year-old's birthday party. Here we are with Adam White, Features Editor. Adam White, how did that cake-blowing event go?
Hosted implies that I had a lot more agency in this than I actually did. I mean, I certainly housed the party within the walls of this establishment here that I have. But I can't say it was the result of my planning or my thoughts. I was really more a victim of the three-year-old's birthday party, John. I think that's more the word I'm looking for, is that a three-year-old's birthday party happened to me, and I recover to this day.
Well, Adam, I'm glad you made it through. Was your gift to the birthday gal a success?
She was very tired, which is really all you could hope for with a toddler, is that, like, at the end of the day, they're exhausted.
Does a three-year-old have friends?
It's weird because, like, we'll see. I had her at my office the other day. And we walked in, and a few of my coworkers and employees and stuff were there. At everyone's office that we walked by, she would be like, "Oh, hi, Brad. This is my friend Daddy. Oh, hi, Sarah. This is my friend Daddy." So she'll introduce me like that. But she has friends in that, like, she has friends that, like, we've inflicted upon her. In that, like, our friends also have kids that age, so they are by de facto her friends. I don't know if she really has a preference. It's really we're calling the shots on that. So yes and no.
Adam, is there a melancholy in the back of your throat now that your baby gal is not so much a baby?
No, because right now we're trying to teach her. We're trying to teach her where and how to pee, and that is just an overall horrible thing to have to, for everyone involved, really. Her, me, my wife. My son doesn't seem to care, but he's like 6 months old. But for the rest of us, it's a horrible thing. So I am not particularly nostalgic about this.
You could just imagine that you have Gigi Allen hanging out at your house, then you're the coolest guy on the block.
It is a lot of the times, like, you have Gigi Allen hanging out at your house. That's parenting experience right there.
Well, speaking of Gigi Allen, we've got Gigi Allen Jr. We are here with news editor, reviews writer, Tricky Ricky Frankel. Tricky Ricky, I hear that you were so enthused by Adam White's talk about John Lydon over the past couple of podcasts that you too have decided to go partake in of He the Rotten.
Yeah, I mean, you know, first of all, the Gigi Allen Jr., I don't know. I don't know what to think of that. I listened to last week's podcast, and I was a little bit worried because I had bought the ticket a while ago, and Adam's talk about it made me feel a little bit better. I mean, I enjoyed the album, but I kind of was hoping it would be a lot more like that, like Double Trouble, that first track, which I loved, but it didn't grab me all the way. And I don't know a ton about Pill. So I'm kind of just going to a show with an open mind. And also, I figure that the Sex Pistols won't be getting back together anytime soon. So I want to see Johnny Rotten do his thing in person.
Badass. Hey, listen, are you going to record store this weekend? Record store day this weekend?
You know, I would, but there's nothing on the list that I want.
Yeah. I'm actually – oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I mean, You know, I thought for a second maybe I would check out that we just posted a story about Green Day's American Idiot being reissued, but I don't think I really need that.
No one really needs that.
Yeah, no one needs that. So, I mean, also, like, last year, Record Store Day, Black Friday Record Store Day, like, I got, there's one thing I wanted, and I just said, I'm not getting up early in the morning for this, and I bought it on Discogs that morning for, like, about the same price it was being sold for anyway. So, I like, you know, I know everyone talks about, like, how Record Store Day, like, the April one is about, like, is a lot, it's, like, a huge consumerist thing and stuff like that. And I don't think so for that day, but, like, Black Friday Record Store Day is, like, I just feel like I'm one of those people trampling others at like, a Walmart. This one I kind of feel is, like, really kind of gouging people. Like, I don't, and there's nothing on the list I wanted. So, if there was, I probably would go, but... The list was kind of weak this year, honestly.
Yeah. Not to drag this conversation out. We'll get to the mail momentarily. But I do agree that, for me, the point of Record Store Day is interesting reissue – no, I'm sorry. Interesting releases of records that you couldn't normally get on other days because there might not be enough consumer interest. This Record Store Day is just a bunch of reissues of records everyone already has that are more expensive. So
Like how many albums – how many reissues of the Clash's first album do I, like, really need?
Yeah.
This past Record Store Day in April was actually pretty good. I mean, I got some really good stuff that I really wanted, and I stood in line at Amoeba for 5 hours to get it, and it was worth it. Here, there just wasn't anything good. That was my main gripe.
Yeah, I hear you. But listen, as always, you can I agree, Ricky. As always, you can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. We got some mail. This is from Jared. Jared says, "What's up, Punk News crew? I wanted to chime in on the streaming audio discussions that have been taking place on the show. I pay for Google Play Music. I also buy physical media. More often than not, I find the technology behind the service to be kind of dumb. It's nearly impossible for me to find new artists or bands I'm actually interested in, because if I look up something like punk or emo, it's not exposing me to the bands I want to hear. It's just your run-of-the-mill popular artists or genre of the genres in Google Play Music. I usually turn to Bandcamp for finding new music now. I'll look at a band's social media profile, go look at their flyers, and search for the bands they're playing with. The only problem with Bandcamp is the artists don't make much from it. However, if they're good and offer physical format like a record or tape, I'll get it. I used to be able to find new and interesting things among record collecting forums, but since the format is super trendy, the record collecting boards are blasted with $30 My Chemical Romance records and novelty releases like the Addams Family soundtrack. Yick. It's nearly impossible for smaller bands to even get records pressed now, so using record collecting as a way to find new stuff is no longer an option for me. The same thing is happening with tapes now. I run a really small DIY label out of my living room, and ever since bigger indies stepped in and started teaming up with Urban Outfitters for compilations and releasing tape editions of Blink-182 albums, it's been harder for me to move small runs of tapes, let alone find communities where super independent releases are talked about and shared. So more or less, the entire landscape is effed. I feel like the only way to find smaller bands without going to shows is by using a platform like Bandcamp, but it's at a loss to the artist to a certain extent. I think Bandcamp is fine, but I can see someone walking away from a digital album that isn't being given away for free. I also checked out EFT Mega, and I'm not a fan. And that's from Jared. So Jared just giving you the rundown on his personal preferences for streaming devices, and he does bring up the interesting point. Now that records are really popular and tapes to a certain degree, the small guys are kind of getting squeezed out by the medium guys.
Yeah, that's absolutely a problem. I mean, like, try to get a 7-inch press these days and you're waiting 6 months depending on the time of year that you're trying to do it, right? I feel that, like, that glut is maybe temporary, where we're at a point where there is way more demand than we have, you know, the ability to manufacture it. And that's going to correct itself. It's just sort of a slow moving thing because, like, you can't open a plant quickly. But that said, that is happening to a degree. Actually, Jack White's Third Band Records just announced that they're opening a plant in Detroit, I think. And they're opening it with a bunch of vinyl pressing machines that they bought from, I want to say, some company in Germany that's manufacturing them now. Like, and that was part of the problem, was that, like, if you wanted to you know, if you wanted to go make records, and I assume this is probably similar with tapes, is like the equipment you're using is just like 30, 40, 50 year old equipment that, you know, they've dug out of, you know, some shuttered factory in Uruguay or whatever that went out of business in the 80s.
Some of it, honestly, Adam, some of it is even like 60 or 70 years old, like the ones they get from like Africa and stuff.
And then you require some like old wizard man to actually like show you how to use the thing because, you know, and you can't keep it up because the parts aren't made anymore and all this. So, you know, that problem will correct itself to a degree, but it, you know, it takes a long time for people to get manufacturing online for obvious, you know, monetary reasons that moves slowly. But I don't know. I mean, I sympathize with our letter writer guy whose name I've completely blanked on right now.
Jared. He's written a couple of times before. He's cool. Jared.
Jared. Yeah. Because it is tough to find stuff right now. And to me, I'm not even entirely sure like who's holding the keys from a curation standpoint, because like to a degree, that was what we were doing on Punk News for a long time. It was like we'd write about stuff and then people would, you know, they'd show up to get news about NOFX and the Bouncing Souls, and they would, you know, see us talking about some random other band, and that would, you know, help get those people into those bands. And I guess maybe we have that role a little bit these days, but now, you know, that was pre Tumblr and
Facebook.
Pre-Facebook and pre like all these, like, you know, if you want, you know, you could go onto WordPress.com and start a esoteric music blog right now along with like 700 other people. So like we've just created noise with all this internet stuff where you don't really know where to go. And I'm trying to think about like what I did when I was younger and trying to find stuff. And I mean, a big part of it for me when I was young was like label compilations, and they're not really doing that anymore to a degree, right? Like I'd figure out that like I like, you know, God, I don't even remember what the band was, but you know, I bought something off of No Idea. You know what? I probably bought like a Less Than Jake CD off of No Idea way back in the day, and I got one of those No Idea comps that had, you know, that they would pack like, you know, it felt like there was like 35 tracks on there from various stuff that was coming out, and so much of it was just stuff that I'd never heard before. And that's where I first heard like Against Me or anything like that, was, you know, those kind of things. Or, you know, you would have, I guess, if magazines or something like that you would trust to kind of play that curation role. Although that was never really my bag. I was never really the kind of person that could pick up a copy of Maximum Rock and Roll and just start like picking bands out of it. Like it always seemed way too much. You know, when they would have those little capsule reviews where you would pick up a copy of MRR and there'd be like, you know, oh, we've reviewed like these like 348 records. So that never really worked for me, but I think like, yeah, for me, it was label comps, which now they're not doing so much. And at this point in my life, it's exactly what the writer said. We're like, I'm looking at like who's opening for shows from other bands that I want to see.
Yeah. I like just to talk about Maximum Rock and Roll. I like parts of Maximum Rock and Roll, and I dislike parts. I'm very torn on Maximum Rock and Roll, but what I like about in the review section, they'll pick an obscure, a super obscure band to review. And then in order to do the review, they'll reference two even more obscure bands. They'll be like, oh, this band, you know, knows trombone. Well, if you like, you know, Weichselbachern, and if you like, you know, Broken Plastic Cup, then you'll like this band. And you're like, like, I've never heard any of these bands, you know. Anyways, this is from Neil. You guys still there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
This is from Neil.
Can I respond real quick?
Oh yeah, go ahead.
So I mean, to me, this, I think two things could either happen with demand in terms of physical. I mean, I wonder if there are just a bunch of investors looking at this vinyl physical resurgence and wondering, is this a fad or is this here to stay? So I think this either could correct itself, where you have a lot of investment in new plants, or what happens is this fad goes away and the same plants just stay open, or some of them go out of business and this, you know, the whole, and everyone just switches to digital except for the true collectors and fans. But yeah, I mean, for me, when I was too young to to really get into comps and stuff like that, or know what comps were, or be like label conscious or whatever. So when I first started getting into punk rock, so I mean, honestly, like you can go back to like the first few episodes of the podcast and you'll hear, and I remember writing in about how like you guys told, like, we're talking about the Bouncing Souls and the Menzingers, and I went to the show and I immediately got into those bands. And then but Punk News was mostly my window into the punk world, because at least where I live in Los Angeles, there's no scene here. It's all in Hollywood and over the hill. So and then I just kind of realized, like, maybe looking at these labels' websites is the way to go. And that's pretty much how I'm here. So yeah. That's kind of my experience.
And this is from Neil. And I like the title, the subject of this email. The subject of this email is, "Say what?" This is what Neil has to say. "Damn, guys, I have to jump in and chastise you, especially you, Adam."
Ah.
Thank God it's not me.
"You were talking about how straightforward Give 'Em Enough Rope is compared to the other Clash albums. Quote, even the first one, quote. But damn it, man. You think you are talking about the first Clash album, but you're not. The real version of the first Clash album was perfect. The UK version. It was the early set. Was very uniform and made sense. It flowed beautifully. But I guess it was too radical for the American market. So it took a full 2 years for them to put it out on the American-Canadian market. And the label completely changed and bastardized it. So you can't talk about the first Clash album and be talking about the American version, because it isn't the first Clash album. It had the same cover, but that's where the similarities end. They effed with the order of songs, added later singles that didn't belong, Clash Shitty Rockers, Complete Control, White Man, Jail Guitar Doors, I Fought the Law, and dropped songs that were essential, Protex Blue, Deny, 48 Hours, Cheap. So what was a vital glimpse of 77 punk became a lame greatest hits compilation that had absolutely no flow at all. And I think Give 'Em Enough Rope is a freaking classic album. Safe European Home is one of their top five tracks. I love it. Also, I have to mention that in episode 273, you forgot to mention another influential punk musician that passed away. Tony Von Frater, longtime bassist with the Cockney Rejects and guitarist in the Angelic Upstarts and Red Alert. November sure has been a shitty month. Thanks for the podcast, guys. Really appreciate every episode." And that's from Neil.
Man, I can't argue with that. The Clash stuff in particular. That's right. I mean, that's I'm just going to leave that with him. That's the right assessment of that. Just to touch on the one death that we didn't mention. There's a handful of bands that I find that has always been really difficult from our end to get covered. This is really our problem at Punk News, I think, more than anything. But like bands like the Cockney Rejects and stuff like that, like, they're one of those bands that we mention all the time if it's in passing. Like, you know, this guy who produced this list of records, including this Cockney Rejects record, but that's not actually what we're talking about, has da 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 da. Where we talk very seldom about like them, Angelic Upstarts, like anything like that. And I don't know why that was. I think it might just be that like we never had anyone on staff that was of that particular era of British punk or anything like that. I'm not sure. But,
you know, I have another band like that, and I've been trying to get them up there a little more, but the Addicts too.
The Addicts are always been weird for me, because as far as I know, and I don't know much, the Addicts are pretty big in the UK.
They also have a huge following in Southern California, and I don't like why.
Yeah,
but they're great.
They have a huge American following, but that huge American following is either does not out themselves to the rest of the punk world, or it exists like as an independent layer. In the same way that, like, to a degree, like, I almost think there's like people that are like, you know, that if the Misfits, whatever version of it, came to your town, you would have like Misfits fans and Misfits shirts just like emerge from the forest who you've never seen before and would never be at like a local punk show or anything like that, but they're huge right. Misfits fans. I feel like the Addicts are like that. Like, you could go to like the middle of nowhere and set up a stage on the side of the road, and like a bunch of dudes with their faces painted would show up and start, you know.
That's kind of how I felt when I saw them a few years ago. They sold out the show. But I mean, I didn't even know. Like, someone told me in the pit, like, yeah, they're huge down here. And it, and I'm like, why? And you notice, like, with their, I noticed it with their tour dates. Like, they're mostly here in Europe. Like the Southwest United States. So,
fun fact about the Addicts: the longest running punk band, continuous punk band with all original members.
That's true. I think they added a violinist.
Oh, well, they lose the title. Yeah. This is from Marcel. This is a couple. I think it was last week. Adam White said, "How do you want to give us money, Punk News listeners? Because we want to buy new mics." Here's what Marcel said: "Hey guys, I feel like Kickstarter is sort of over, and Patreon, as weird and skeezy as it seems, looks like it's here to stay. I guess the alternative is just throw up a donate button on the site. I have seen sites that somehow get funds from Amazon when someone buys stuff recommended on the podcast. That's internet magic to me, though. Keep it up."
I know how that works, and it's actually pretty – it requires more website than audio to make those kind of like affiliate things work. And I think part of this that's sort of the weird bit for us is that like we as in like you and I, John, we kind of do this – podcast is a bit of like an independent rogue project that like the rest of Punk News doesn't have too much to do with. So I don't want to like conflate, you know, whatever revenue streams exist to like pay for Punk News's servers to exist with what we're trying to do here sometimes. So I don't know. I'd be a little bit hesitant about mixing those. I mean, Patreon might be the thing. We'll see. I'm not going to jump too quickly into this. We're surviving otherwise. But you know, a little bit of audio fidelity couldn't hurt. You know, grow the audience just a bit.
And as always, you can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. And if you want to give us money or have an idea of how we could make money, we're all ears. podcast@punknews.org. Listen, we've already been talking for about 20 minutes. Do we want to address this topic, or do we want to table this next topic again for next week?
No, you know what? Let's play a song, and then we should table the topic, because the news this week is a little bit light.
So we should talk about this topic.
We should. We'll do it after the song.
All right. What tune are we playing, Adam? What are we jamming?
I'm going to play you guys a song from Black Lungs. Black Lungs, we have played them on the show before a long time ago. They are the band of Wade McNeil, who used to be in Alexis on Fire, who currently sings for Gallows. He had a punk band called Black Lungs that was based out of, I guess they were based out of Toronto, but they were guys in that band from Sudbury, Ontario, guys in that band from St. Catharines, Ontario. Anyways, though, so they had a bunch of cool little EPs that they had released over the past few years. He had one full length that he did more as a solo project, and then they went dormant pretty much when Wade joined Gallows, but they apparently recorded a whole LP, and over I think it was Halloween this year, they went and just released the whole thing for free on the internet. So the LP is called Pagan Holiday. It is way louder and way meaner than a lot of the Black Lung 7 inches were. So this is a song from that. It is called Class of 98.
Black market.
And we're back on the Punk News Podcast. That was Black Lungs doing Class of 98. Now listen, fellas, I've had something on my mind for the – well, I mean, I've had this on my mind for about a year and a half now, but more now than ever, it's apropos. And people are going to say, John – well, John, you're speaking about this certain artist that I have in my mind, but I'm not. I'm specifically talking about Jeff Hanneman of Slayer, and I think the scenario surrounding Jeff Hanneman is quite apropos to a lot of artists that have passed away recently, but I'm not talking about any one artist that has passed away recently specifically. As you all know, about within the past 2 or 3 months, like 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 artists that were very well known in the punk community have passed away. And part of that is just because a lot of the punk rockers are getting up there. They're 65, they're 70, they're 75. I mean, Penny Rimbaud's like 75. I mean, I don't want to jinx anybody. Penny Rimbaud is still alive and well, but he's 75. He's an older gentleman, you know. So part of the reason why a lot of those guys are passing away is because they're getting up there. However, there's also been some younger guys that have passed away as well. And I'm reminded of when Jeff Hanneman of Slayer died. If you remember, Jeff Hanneman of Slayer suffered a spider bite in South America, and basically the infection spread throughout his body, and actually he actually got like some flesh-eating bacteria disease from it. Well, he recovered from it, but the problem was that even though he recovered, he couldn't recover fully because it came out later that basically he had a pretty bad drinking problem, and he could have recovered if he had cut back on the drinking of the hard alcohol and the beer, but he wouldn't, so he couldn't fight the infection, and eventually he died because he couldn't stop drinking, which is very sad. If you haven't checked out Slayer, check out the Jeff Hanneman material. Jeff Hanneman was a true genius of heavy metal. So about a year and a half ago, maybe it was a year ago, I went and saw Slayer. It was basically their first real tour after Jeff Hanneman had passed away. And the last song, or second to last song, while they were playing a Jeff Hanneman song, it might have been Raining Blood, a big tribute was lowered on behind the stage while they were playing. The tribute was a gigantic Heineken symbol. Do you guys know the Heineken symbol? It's like a circle with red and green and stuff.
Yeah.
And it was a giant Heineken symbol, but instead of saying Heineken, it said Hanneman. And that's because Hanneman's favorite beer was Heineken. And so I was wondering, is that extremely tasteless, or is that being true to the man? And here's why I asked this. Is Jeff Hanneman died early. A extremely significant reason of why he died early was because he had a drinking problem. Is saluting someone who died from a drinking problem through drinking or through paying homage to that drinking, is that in extremely poor taste, or is that just saying, listen, we're not going to try to disguise who this guy was. We're going to celebrate him as he lived, not as he died. And here's why I thought of this recently. We've had a lot of – well, we've had some artists die recently under different circumstances. And inevitably, with all of them, not 1 or 2 days after they died, people say, oh, I'm drinking a shot in honor of – Bill Smith, you know, or like, oh, we miss you, Bill Smith, and it's like 9 people all drinking or doing other stuff. And I'm wondering, is that in poor taste, or is that what you should do and not try to, I guess, color someone's past when that really wasn't them and really that kind of thing was part of their life? Second part of this, and we can get into this later, Adam, I know you're a fan of the malted beverages. Ricky, are you a fan of the malted beverages?
Like beer and
beer.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'll have cider, but I mean, I'm more cider. I'm much more of a, I just like, you know, straight liquor instead of beer. I just, it's not like I get hammered or anything like that. I just, I just feel like super just gross after like one beer. And I don't understand how people can put away like 5, 6 Pabst Blue Ribbons. It's beyond me. So
the question is I often bang on the drug thing and the beer thing. Am I too hard-lined? I'm wondering if I'm too callous and too, you know, anti-substance. But anyway, the more important question is, when someone dies of a substance issue, should you salute them through substances or not? I don't know.
I think in the Slayer case, I think that was all in good taste. I don't think the band would have done something in poor taste, especially in
you
front of a whole
crowd. You don't think Slayer would have done something in poor taste?
Well, I mean, not to someone who was a part of the band. And you know what? They must have been thinking like, what do you think he would have like wanted us to do? Do you think he would have liked this? And they were probably right. I think, and also like drinking's a big whether you agree with it or not, drinking is a big part of
heavy metal
music culture in general. You always hear about, you know, you always see, I mean, when you go like see other bands, like, you know, once they're done, they'll be at the bar drinking or something,
but
like that.
Ian McKay argues that's an artificial construct and it should even exist.
It doesn't.
Like Ian McKay says, why is alcohol like mixed up with music? What does alcohol have to do with music at all? That's Ian McKay's
perfect
argument.
That is perfectly legitimate, but it's just about choice, really. I mean, so it's tough on the road. And I think, like, you know, after a beer, and also if you're nervous after a show or before a show, maybe putting one back just to kind of calm the nerves isn't a horrible thing to do. It's when you start drinking a ton and, like, you can't stop. That's a problem. But, yeah, I think, you know what, if hopefully people just kind of know their limit and know, like, alcohol is addictive and just to be careful. But after that, it's up to them. Like, it also cuts social tension too. Like, you know, you see people, when people go to a party, everyone's sober, it can be kind of, you know, a little tense. So you throw like some, when people are partying, like after a show, you know,
Ricky busts out a few Zimas,
yeah, exactly. a few Mickey's 40 ounces or whatever. But yeah, I think it's fine to do that. I mean, it's just when you start overdoing it, becoming an alcoholic, that's when you
got to stop. But how about when someone passes away from substance and people are out saying, let's have a shot in honor of Bill Smith?
I think that's more for them. And it's how some people, I don't do that, but like everyone has their own grieving process, you know? And it's more of a way of honoring them. It's not like it's more of the alcohol. It's like giving a special attention to that one person that died who people cared about, and then, you know, taking the shot, and then that's it.
I think that in the Hanneman situation, what they're doing there is that's I don't think it's tasteless. I think it's a tribute. It's,
yeah,
the difference, like the fine line here is that this is a guy that, you know, he lived hard. He was a rock and roller. When he was indulging and being that person and embodying like that as part of his persona, he wasn't, at least to my knowledge, and I could be totally wrong about this, I'm not a Slayer expert, but, you know, he was doing that because that was how he was choosing to live. And the fact that ultimately had a role in his demise is a different situation than if he would say more of a victim of it. So if, you know, if he was struggling his whole life with a substance problem, and then the substance eventually got the best of him, and then he died based on that, then yeah, it would be, I think it would be in a lot poorer taste. So I really think depends like on the situation, right? You know, if someone dies because, you know, like heaven forbid they're, you know, they're driving drunk or something like that, and they run into a wall. Well, then, okay. At that point, then, you know, there was clearly something so horrible happened as a result of making bad decisions there, that it seems like, you know, to use that as part of the remembrance process seems pretty skeezy. In this case, you know, it wasn't necessarily the alcohol that killed him, but it definitely didn't help. But at some point, that was still his choice of how he was living. So I'm not going to shit on Slayer too much for doing this. I mean, and the other thing is that they've done it to such a degree where, like, if you've seen any of the pictures of Slayer with that huge, like, Still Raining logo up behind them, like, it is a pretty massive undertaking. It wasn't something that they were necessarily, I think, doing with little thought being put into it. Like, they had to have like a 30-foot logo manufactured to hoist up behind the stage. So, you know, I would imagine that someone in that camp would have stopped and asked these questions before we were asking these questions, and clearly someone there was okay with it. So, you know, I'm gonna I'm going to say that, you know, if the rest of Slayer was cool with that and Hanneman's family is not coming after them for doing it, then, you know, who am I to judge that? That's okay, I guess. To come back to what you were asking, John, though, about is your line on this stuff a little bit too harsh?
That's my question.
I don't know. I don't want to cast aspersions on how someone deals with this stuff, because people come at this from different life experiences, different situations.
Culturally.
I'm fortunate enough that, you know, I come from a family of where like alcohol abuse has never been a problem, and everyone seems to get on quite well with, you know, with sort of like the casual having a drink with dinner kind of thing, you know, seems to not have turned around and really bite anyone too much. I mean, yeah, my grandfather in his later years was relying a little bit too much on the whiskey there, but he was really old, and he was, you know, that he had gone down that path, but I can't, you know, the way that like that my life has brought me to the point where I'm in it and I'm, you know, consuming alcohol, it's not one where I've had to like go and weigh that against, you know, some horrible set of consequences. So, you know, on my end, I've always been, you know, pretty liberal about it and pretty okay about it, but hey, that isn't necessarily yours. So I don't want to, you know, I don't want to say that like, oh man, John, you need to loosen up. And, you know,
well, the weird thing is no one in my family really drinks at all. Neither of my parents do. Neither of my grandfathers did. My one grandmother did not. My other grandmother was Irish, and she had one beer a day. And that's about it. So I think just alcohol is like a foreign thing to me, and that no one in my family really drank like at all, really. You know,
I think one of the big problems is that like, there's always like these, like, I feel like there's like three solid narratives that are going on with the alcohol thing. And I feel that like one of them is super uninteresting and one of them is horrible. And if you manage to be on the middle track, then it's kind of fun. Where it's like the super uninteresting thing is, and you know, I've got, you know, people in the extended family that are on this train for sure, where, you know, they're going to go out and they're going to buy like a case of Bud Light, and they're just going to work their way through that case of Bud Light each week or whatever. And, you know, if I'm ever over there and they're like, here, have a Bud Light. And I'm just like, yes, this is the most super, super uninteresting thing to be sitting here putting into myself right now. Like, I get no pleasure out of it. But there's people that do that just consume a fairly sizable amount of fairly uninteresting alcohol, and just that's just part of their life. And then like on the total flip extreme of that, you have like alcoholism. And then somewhere in the middle, there's how that all plays out from a cultural standpoint. And I think that's the interesting place to be. And that's where I would put, like, you know, people that are into wine, or people that collect, you know, good whiskey, or people that are like craft beer snobs or anything like that, where, you know, if you can walk that path where it's just like one extra element on the cultural landscape, along with, you know, music and theater and television and, you know, interpretive dance and whatever else you may be into, right? And I think from that standpoint, it's falls far more into like the realm of like, you know, fine food appreciation than it does like, you know, going out to get ripped. But, you know, your mileage is going to vary on this. I mean, there are people that have gone through like absolute hell in their families due to alcohol. So like, I would not want to like prescribe that they have, you know, any opinion other than the one that they've come to on it. So, John, I feel like you're just manufacturing shit for me to get a letter about.
No, I mean, honestly, I feel like I'm manufacturing shit for me to get a letter about, because like, it's a real shame when artists die, or anybody dies, because of these substances. From the art perspective, you know, Dave Brocky, no one saw that coming at all. And he's dead. Like, no one saw that coming at all. And all of a sudden, Dave Brocky, he's dead. And if I don't know if that's enough of an eye-opener for artists, I don't know what is, you know?
There's a part of me that gets very nihilistic when I think about these things. And And like, on the one hand, I don't want to agree with you and say, like, you know, if you're cutting your life short because you've overindulged and you are like taking your art away from the world or whatever, well, you know, that's a bad decision that you have made, dummy. And there's a part of me that wants to say that. But then I turn around and I look at, like, you know, things that I cannot put, I can't attach any kind of like moral defect to. And it just says to me that, like, the universe is fucking horrible. We're like, how did Joe Strummer die?
Didn't he have
undiagnosed congenial heart defect?
You know, actually,
like, fuck, right? So, you know, you live your life and, you know, maybe you party, maybe you don't, but you get to a point where, like, you know, you have the world's respect. You know, you're making good art still. You have a family and everything like that. You haven't wrecked your life. And then you die from an undiagnosed heart defect. Like, fuck you, universe. Right? Like, there's,
yeah.
I wish it was merely like a, you know, hey, people, don't kill yourselves. But then, you know, a tree falls on you. So I don't know. Don't kill other people, I think, is really what you want to do. That's probably the better thing. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to go with that. If you play in like a crazy metal band and at one point you want to do like a whole garbage bag full of Quaaludes or something like that and die, I guess that's up to you. Just don't do it in a way that's going to hurt anybody else. I don't actually know anything about Quaaludes. I assume a garbage bag would kill you though.
I think a garbage bag of most things will kill you.
If you had to eat like a whole garbage bag full of carrots, I bet you'd get like 2 pounds in.
But I mean, if someone forced a garbage bag of carrots down your throat, I'm pretty sure your stomach would explode.
Oh yeah, okay. Well, I mean, physics aside, what are we talking about?
We're talking about leftover crack, Adam. That's what we're talking about.
Let's talk about leftover crack. Ricky,
stoked.
You like this leftover crack record, right?
Yeah, I'm actually, I mean, by the time this podcast comes out, my review of it will be up. But yeah, Conscience of the State, Leftover Crack Volume 3 comes out on Fat Records, November 27th, billboard.com is streaming it. I love this record. It's just different enough to stand out from the other two. But it's the same Leftover Crack that we all love, even if, I mean, again, like I've said before on the podcast, this is the first one without Ezra Kyer. But I mean, I am loving this album. I think it's when it was announced, it was my most anticipated record of the year. I think Fat's a great place for them right now. I mean, I'm loving like Archaic Subjugation, how that moves into Don't Shoot. I love Corrupt Vision. The covers on this album are amazing. Last Legs, which is a Blackbird Rom song, which I played last time I was on, I think 2 weeks ago now, is truly amazing. If you can listen to that original and then compare it to the cover that they did, awesome. I think the fact that they adopted the introspect song, The War at Home, is really interesting because it's so like synth and piano centric. But it's a much better rendition, recording of it compared, I think, to the original. And Sturgeon's on both recordings anyway, so I think it made sense. And also Donnie and Chris, who are now in the band, were in Introspect too. So that made a lot of sense. What I've been seeing and what I've been hearing from other people when I showed them the stream is how much this has like a Star Fucking Hipsters feel to it. And I'm just wondering, is that just because there's a solid amount of female guest vocalists, or is there an actual like, or do you think it just kind of bled over after doing 3 albums with Star Fucking Hipsters that sound, quote unquote, you know, moved and bled into this? I don't know. John, what did you think? What do you think of the album?
I think it's an excellent album. Ricky, you said that you think it's the same Leftover Crack that we know. I disagree. I think this record is radically different than the other Leftover Crack albums. I'd say that each Leftover – I'd say this album is a success and that each of the three main Leftover Crack – I realize there's other recordings. But each of the three of the main Leftover Crack albums each have their own unique identity. The first one, of course, is the ska punk one. The second one is kind of more the melancholy ballad one. This one is kind of – the darkest one, it's kind of the most intense one. It's kind of the most claustrophobic one. Ricky, you asked why are people saying this is like SFH? I think the reason people are saying this is like SFH is because these songs are a lot more cramped, and I mean that in a good. They're cramped. They're a little bit more intense. They're more hardcore. They're very down tempo ish. There's not a whole lot of ska on this album like there was in the first and even the second album. I think so. That's why people are saying it's more like SFH. I think it's an excellent album. I think it's I like how it's their most hardcore and kind of their most crustiest, and definitely I think it's their darkest album, to tell you. Like, the second one's probably the saddest, but I think this one is the darkest and maybe even the angriest. It's certainly the most mature, if you will. I think the guests are well done in between. You know, it's got Eric Peterson of Mischief Brew. He's on it. It's great. It's got the Jesse Michaels track, which is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. It's got a little bit of a Penny Rimbaud clip on it, which is cool. I think the record is great. I think it's probably going to surprise some people. I think a lot of people still think of Leftover Crack as just as a ska punk band, but this is much more of a hardcore record. And I like how this record basically pays tribute to classic hardcore in that it's traditional in some aspects, but in other aspects it's they're hardcore. It's very unusual in structure and very weird and unexpected. So it's a very new sounding record. So I think it's a success. I think it's a great record. And I think I've seen them play a lot of this live and they sound great. So Leftover Crack is a phenomenal band. I think they don't get quite enough credit as they should. I think people kind of portray them as a cartoon instead of what they really are. And I think a lot of people don't really analyze the lyrics and think about the band, and they just kind of assume things about the band or look at the surface value, the face value of the band, because the band is so different and is so unique from pretty much both more serious like crust punk genres, but also your standard org core whiskey and friendship kind of band. They're an extremely unique band, and that's why they're so divisive, and it's a great record. Speaking of great records, let's play a track. We've recently had a bit of a DFL love fest over at Punk News. We interviewed Monty Messick of DFL. We did a review of their new record. In case you don't know, DFL was a 90s hardcore band that kind of was sort of sounding like 80s hardcore band. They had a couple of Beastie Boys in their ranks for a little while. Let's play Epitaph and Burger Records just re-released their second album, Proud to Be DFL. This is a great – honestly, this album was due to be re-released. It was great to get some new focus on this album. This is a great, awesome, hardcore record. This is DFL doing Proud to Be DFL off the album, Proud to Be DFL on Epitaph and Burger Records. Check it out. We are back. That was DFL doing Proud to Be DFL. Honestly, you should check – if you haven't checked out that record, I didn't know a whole lot about that band really until this year, to tell you the truth. But it's if you like hardcore, you definitely should check out that record. Speaking, you know, we were talking a lot about substances and stuff. Along those lines, the Menzingers, the Menzos, one of the favorite bands at Punk News, they're getting their own signature beer. The beer is being released in collaboration with Neshaminy Creek Brewing Company. And actually, the guy that owns that actually has some kind of punk rock connections. I think he owns or was co-owner of a label. And I think that label put out is it Square of Opposites? I'll look it up while we're talking. Anyway, he's got a brewery there. And actually, he had like Andrew WK come play a show there once and stuff. Anyway, the Neshaminy Creek Brewing Company, which is right outside of Philadelphia, they're releasing their own beer in conjunction with the Menzingers. Adam White, what's your opinion of band brews, and is that just good time fun?
Well, the one thing that's kind of endearing about this is they went and they threw up a video where the guys in the Menzingers actually went by the brewery and they were helping them put it together, and they were talking a little bit about how they had all sort of outside of the, you know, outside of their musical lives, have had, you know, some interest in home brewing before, so. So that's kind of cool. I mean, like, this is – so it looks like what's going to happen is that the Menzingers themselves are going to be playing a show at the brewery, and this is going to be the kind of small batch that they're putting together is going to be on tap, you know, at the brewery for that show. You know, not necessarily something that is yet going to be, you know, available for – you know, the rest of the world to consume if you're not in that place in time. But that's kind of what is really cool about some of these little craft brewers is that you can do neat little projects like that that are, you know, that aren't just a product that you're making to go stick in a store, but is a thing that's going to be tied to a time and a place, and it's limited. And then when it's gone, and you have to make something different the next time, or you might make something that, you know, you hope is the same but turns out different. And that's one of the charms about the whole kind of craft brew thing, is that, you know, you get personality, you get kind of weird one-off things, you get, you know, you get someone like this that runs the joint that says, hey, I'm a fan of this band, or I'm a fan of, you know, punk rock in general, and I want to get some of those guys involved. So it's neat. I mean, like, and I'm also coming at this from the completely biased, like, I'm a home brewer, so, you know, I'm watching the video of them making this stuff, and I'm like, oh man, I wish I had some of this equipment. So, yeah, I'm cool with this. And this is one of the, to me, like, more feel goody Menzingers stories than a lot of the kind of, you know, run of the mill, the band's going on tour, the band has a record coming out kind of stuff that we've had to talk about for them for the last little while. So this is neat. This is cool. I'm down.
Yeah, I am too. I am too. I mean, I'd be interested. I mean, I think they talked about in the video how there's going to be like a wider release at some point with maybe a different kind of beer under the Menzingers name or something like that. I'd be interested to try it. I'm still waiting to try some others, like I had the chance to try the NoFX one sticking in my rye, but I didn't because apparently it's so strong you really can't drive after.
Here's where I guess I'm really wondering too, is like the one of the reasons why I kind of like this is that, like, you know, at least by what the video was showing, you know, the band was there having a hand in this. So I don't know with a lot of other, you know, co-labeled band brews that are out there or similar, how much they've really had to do with it. Like, you can go buy Motorhead wine. I don't know how much Lemmy's had a hand in the production of said wine. Although that said, like, Lemmy is a huge wine drinker. He really is. But I don't know if
I don't know how much
part of the process he had. You know, any more so than maybe he had a hand in the production of those Motorhead vibrators that we talked about. So,
I mean, I also, I know, I think Against Me has like Black Me Stout or something like that. Which I also been wanting to try.
This is where all the ska puns have gone. All the guys that were making like pun filled ska bands are now labeling beers.
Yeah. I mean, I'd be interested to try it. I am, like I said before, I'm not a beer drinker like myself too much, but this was cool, and it's I've just been wondering what the band themselves have been doing other than touring. I'd be very interested to see if where they go next, to be honest, in terms of record label even, or just the next album.
Yeah, I think the Neshaminy Creek Brewing Company, I could be wrong, but I think there's a connection to Jumpstart Records there.
That's possible, because I think was their first album on Jumpstart or Go-Kart? I think it might have been both. I don't know. But yeah, I figured when I saw this, I'm like, oh, this is probably this looks like it's in John's neck of the woods.
There is seriously a part of me where, you know, my dream life would be to, you know, to own and operate a small little like brew pub that makes its own beer and has bands play at it. So there's a part of me that looks at this and just goes like, man, what am I doing with my life?
Honestly, I don't know. I think owning I know owning a restaurant is a huge headache. You can make a lot of money doing it, but I don't think it's very fun. Like, I think the novelty wears off mega quickly. You
know? Yeah, and actually, I've heard that by a lot of people that that are in the brewing industry. Where and this is the one thing that maybe a lot of people don't necessarily clue into, especially people that are just like into craft beer because they like it. It's that like running a brewery is basically running a factory. But it's running a factory where you have to have like food safety production standards on it. So it's not, you know, it's work. You're lugging shit around and, you know, working with heat and, you know, it's not, you know, it's, you're not sitting around all day, you know, thinking about the universe.
The funniest job is running a record label, but too bad no one buys records anymore.
Everything sucks, John.
Everything sucks, man. I hate society. I hate this universe.
Speaking of shit that you hate, John, let's talk about the Grateful Dead. So this is I don't even know how you're going to react to the story, because I can't even put together where your brain's going with this. But the folks in the band, the much heralded, much popular band, The National, they're spearheading a Grateful Dead tribute album. So in addition to The National themselves recording for the release, they've gotten a whole bunch of other artists, including some punk bands, to contribute tracks. So bands that are appearing on the compilation include Fucked Up, Perfume Genius, who do we got here? Tuned Ad Blimp. Do I know who that is? I don't know who that is.
Well, Jay Mask is of Dinosaur Jr.
Yeah, Marijuana Death Squads, Unknown Mortal Orchestra, Daniel Rosen, Stephen Malkmus of Pavement, Bon Iver, Sharon Von Etten, Lee Ronaldo of Sonic Youth, Ira Kaplan of Yola Tango, Kurt Vile and Jay Maskus, as you said, and the band The War on Drugs. All these guys are contributing some Grateful Dead covers to this thing. John, one of the prevailing themes of my entire relationship with you is how much you hate the Grateful Dead. So
I hate the Grateful Dead. I cannot stand the Grateful Dead. Once every 2 years, I will try to get into the Grateful Dead because people love them. They have over 200 live albums. 200 live albums, Adam. And I'm like, there's got to be something there. And people love this band. If a band can put out 200 live albums, there's got to be something there. And I listen to the Grateful Dead. Every 2 years, I try. I own like 10 Grateful Dead albums. And it's just the most boring, milquetoast, brutal music I've ever heard. It's so boring. I literally cannot believe how boring the Grateful Dead is. I listened to their big album, American Beauty. And I'm like, oh my god! I couldn't believe how long it would take to get through the album, and I realized I was only on the first half. It was so bad and so boring. I was crying. And people were like, oh, you got to hear him live, man. You got to hear. So I got some Grateful Dead live CDs. Oh my god! I thought the albums were bad. The live albums are the albums times three, and they're twice as boring. What's the most What's most annoying about the Grateful Dead for me is they have such awesome names and such awesome imagery. You know, there's the skeleton with the rose in his hair. There's the panda bears that are tripping on acid. They've got songs like Dark Star. They've got songs like Fire on the Mountain. They've got songs Friend of the Devil. I'm like, oh man, this is going to sound like bikers flying through outer space, you know, warring with elves and, you know, chasing, like, you know, seducing maidens and fighting manticores. It's going to be those far out rocking music I've ever heard. Instead, it's seven guys with banjos holding them backwards. It's brutal. The Grateful Dead is a brutal band. Brutal. I cannot recommend The Grateful Dead. What's interesting about The Grateful Dead? I don't know. They've had a contentious relationship with punk rock since punk rock started. If you ask Johnny Rotten, if you ask The Clash, if you ask The Ramones, I think they would all say The Grateful Dead sucks, at least Johnny Ramone. I think they'd say this is the kind of music we're reacting against. But as with all punk rock, whatever the earlier guys react against, the later guys react against that. So after the first wave of punk rockers, along comes the second wave of punk rockers, like Black Flag, like Greg Ginn, Henry Rollins, Dez Kadena, I think Chuck Tikowski, they're all huge Grateful Dead fans. A lot of other punk rockers are fans of Grateful Dead too. And actually, Black Flag were such fans of the Grateful Dead, they recorded what is essentially a Grateful Dead tribute album called Tom Tricali's Dog. And actually, it's not that bad because it doesn't sound like the Grateful Dead. But so punk – right now it's cool to like the Grateful Dead if you're a punk rocker. They're just boring. And I loved Effed Up. And I maybe they can make the song interesting. I try to listen to the Grateful Dead. I'm like, there's got to be something here. And it just beep, 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 beep. I had a girl with golden hair. Beep, 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 beep. I'm sitting here. Beep, beep, beep. Oh, my. I just want to start punching Jerry Garcia in his face just to make him shut up. Anyways, Grateful Dead is terrible. Ricky likes
that. That said, the one shining Grateful Dead benefit to the world was for that former Grateful Dead lyricist, John Perry Barlow, was the founder of the Electronic Frontier Foundation and the Freedom of the Press Foundation, and is the guy that is basically out there fighting for your fucking internet rights these days. So, you know, much respect to him.
You see what happens when you stop doing acid and playing the banjo, Adam? You actually make something of yourself.
There you go. Ricky, you have like 6 Grateful Dead tattoos.
I hate that I'm on this podcast now. You know, here's the deal. I'm not gonna, you know, John and I have been going back and forth on this one for quite a while. Here's the thing. As a fan of the Grateful Dead, I totally get why people hate them. Okay. Like, it's slow. It takes forever to get through some of the really really long songs. You know, I'm looking at my iTunes library just because I want to make sure. Like, you know, it's very, very common that a lot of slow songs will go for over 6 minutes. And with
Grateful
them,
Dead have like 45 minute long songs live.
Exactly. And honestly, I wouldn't have gone to the live albums. It sounds like they probably were jamming a lot. But anyway, I pick and choose the songs. I think, I personally think American Beauty is a perfect record. Everything else you have to really pick and choose. I love American Beauty. It's just, you know, some people like reggae, and you know, sometimes you can't just listen to only leftover crack and like only really like harsh metal stuff. Sometimes you just need a break. Some people like reggae for that. I personally like American Beauty for that and a few other songs I pick and choose. I remember I got a very best of the Grateful Dead CD, and that's the one I pretty much listen to. I mean, Touch of Grey is a really good song. Hell in a Bucket. And also, you know, when I was younger, like in my, you know, 10, 11, 12, this was a band I could, while I was into like the starter punk bands, this was a band along with the Beatles I could get along and play music with my brother and sister. We used to play like Ripple and Box of Rain. So I have a special place for them. I don't recommend them to people ever. I think some of their blues rockabilly stuff, like Alabama Getaway, is actually a very good song for to listen to, and a starter guitar song. It's a perfect 12 bar blues song. That's really fun to kind of like learn to improvise to and all that stuff. So if you're going to start with the Grateful Dead, I just go to the very best of stuff. And then if you want to go to American Beauty, but like after that, it's very hard to find the other songs that are the other gems, because there's a lot of rough in there, but I do know people that love them too. That being said, with this article though, what the fuck is a fucked up cover of a Grateful Dead song going to sound like?
Fucked up is no stranger to playing like, you know, 12-minute noodling tracks for.
I know, but right? Can you imagine Damien screaming the words to like "Friend of the Devil"?
No, because I don't know what kind of horrible music this band plays, Ricky.
Well, okay, fine. So "Friend of the Devil" is just a super folky song. Anyway,
you've never heard Grateful Dead, Adam?
I am tangentially aware of the Grateful Dead to the point where. I had a roommate that listens to it a lot, and I was not into it, so I didn't really try to it was background music in the house, so it was never something that I made any kind of effort to understand.
Sonically, it's pretty safe music. I'll give you that. I happen to enjoy some of the stuff. The whole discography, though, is truly exhausting.
How I envy Adam White, who has never had to endure the water torture pain that is the Grateful Dead. Oh,
But back to this article, like, I just don't see this being good. I'll check it out because I'm just curious what, like, Fucked Up will do to a Grateful Dead song, which one they choose. It doesn't say which one they're going to play. But, like, I don't know, like... I mean, if you know the song "Friend of the Devil," like I said, like is Damien going to like truly sing this, or is he going to scream it? Because this is soft music. This is non-aggressive soft music. You are supposed to trip out to.
But I mean, Effed Up could do like a really weird heavy version, which I would be into probably.
Honestly, for them,
chips cashed in, keep trucking.
I mean,
like the dude I made together. More or less in line. I mean,
they're going to have to really, really make sure they pick the right song because this could backfire. And I don't see this whole thing being fantastic. I'm not a fan of The National either, or Pavement, or War on Drugs, or Bon Iver, or however you say that. So
you don't like Pavement, but you like The Grateful Dead?
I don't. Not really. Okay. Like I said, I hate the fact that I'm on this podcast.
How does it feel to be history's greatest monster?
Listen, this is a I'll just say this. This is a controversial article. I don't see this being fantastic, but I will be willing to check it out. I could be surprised. Fuck.
Ricky, how many
times? I was willing to give you a pass on this, but this combined.
Don't give me a pass. I have not heard a lot of Pavement. They're doing Box of Rain. Oh no, that's Kurt Vile. All right, well, you know, I'll check this out. But I haven't listened to the Grateful Dead. I think in months. It's a very like sporadic thing for me. I'll probably listen to them like 4 or 5 times a year. So,
that probably takes up 7 or 8 months. Their songs are so long.
Yeah, you know, usually by the time I get through like American Beauty, like the A side, I have to like change, brush my teeth, shave, that whole thing.
All right, Ricky, play us a song. It's not allowed to be a dead song.
It's not a dead song. I wouldn't do that to our loyal listeners and absolutely fantastic commenters. So Stevie Allen is a new news editor. She reviewed this album called Leave the Suburbs by The Exhaust. There's some UK three-piece pop punk garagey band, and she and her husband John, who shoots pictures for Punk World Views, told me about this, and they showed it to me. I'm like, oh, this is pretty good. And so I listened to it more, and then she wrote the review for it and gave it 4 stars. I'm like, you know what? I agree with that. It's a really good record. That was completely self-released, I think. So I'm gonna play a song from that. This song is off Leave the Suburbs, and it's up for name your own price on their Bandcamp, which is theexhaust.bandcamp.com. This song is called Filmanov Adverts. Check it out. I promise you it's not like The Grateful Dead. And again, the album is called Leave the Suburbs by The Exhaust. Here it is.
Alone.
Kenny. Wow, dude, John, you led. I led. God damn it!
Well, listen, man,
get your shit together, guys.
Listen, man, the reason we're all interrupting each other is because we're all on acid. We all decided to get tie-dye T-shirts and eat some grilled cheese sandwiches. We're just feeling groovy. We're crunching on the good vibes. Adam, man, how are the good vibes, man? Are you feeling groovy?
I don't want to bring grilled cheese sandwiches into this. I'll leave those out of this.
Just trucking. We decide we're going to follow the Dead on tour. All three of us are going to go follow the Dead on tour now.
We should all meet in Haight-Ashbury, buy some more tie-dye shirts and headbands and a whole bunch of weed, and peace, we'll be ready.
Peace, man. Yeah. Well, listen, we're feeling groovy. That wraps up today's podcast. Adam White, thanks for the crunchy vibes on tonight's podcast.
Oh, John. We shouldn't do this. We shouldn't talk about the Dead.
Why not? I mean, why? Because we will enrage people, or because the Dead aren't worthy of being discussed.
It's a vortex, and then we go in the vortex, and then Ricky's here, and then we abuse Ricky, and it's bad news.
And Tricky Ricky Frankel, thanks for being on the podcast. Thanks for defending Jerry Garcia and his BO and all that kind of stuff.
Okay, that is false.
As always, you can reach that podcast at punknews.org, and we'll see you next week. Peace, man.